Masechta Chores Perek Tes Mishnah Ches until Masechta Erchin Perek Aleph Mishnah Gimel. The previous Mishnah talked about the actual procedure of separating the Maaser Behema. The owner of the animals would let all of the animals into an enclosure, a pen, and let each animal exit the pen one by one whilst counting it, and when he reaches the 10th one he would declare it Maaser Behema. What happens if at the beginning, Yotzu Shnayim Ke'echad, two animals left this enclosure at once? He should not count them one by one, rather since they exited together as a pair, Meina Oison Shnayim Shnayim, he should count them now as two at a time. So these first two animals which exited, he should count as the first pair, the first set of two, and the next two animals which leave, he shouldn't count as 3-4, but rather as the second pair. Now what happens if when the first two animals exited, he didn't count them as the first pair, but rather he counted them one by one? Although ideally that should not be done, it would certainly be okay, but he eved once it has been done. But what happens if Menon Echod, he counted both of these first two animals which exited together as one? And then he continued counting from the next animal which exited, which is really the third animal, he continued counting from number two. So he was counting 2, 3, 4, when in reality it was the third animal, the fourth or fifth. In such a case, it would emerge that Tashiv Asiri, the animals which he counts as being the 9th and 10th, Mukulkolin, are damaged, literally, meaning there's something wrong with them. The one which he counted as being the 9th one was in reality the 10th animal. The one which he counted as the 10th animal was in reality the 11th animal. Now, the Mishnah over here already, and in the coming examples, is going to show that there is a unique law learnt from Psukim, that if somebody by mistake declares either the 9th animal or the 11th animal as being the 10th, then it gains the sanctity of Maaser Behema. At the same time, if he, for whatever reason, does not call the real 10th animal the 10th animal, he makes a mistake in the counting, since in reality it is the 10th animal which exited, it would also have the status of Maaser Behema. So an animal can gain the status of Maaser Behema either by in reality being the 10th animal, or by being called the 10th animal, as long as it is in reality either the 9th or 11th. If it's any further away from the 10th animal, then this unique law would not apply. But if it's one of those adjacent numbers, the 9th or the 11th animal, if he called it the 10th animal, then it would indeed gain the status of Maaser Behema. However, there is a difference between the animals. The animal which in reality is the 10th animal always becomes Maaser Behema, even if it wasn't called the 10th animal. The 9th animal, however, even when it is called the 10th animal and it becomes Maaser Behema, rather than being bought as a korban like real Maaser Behema, it needs to be left to get a blemish and then eaten as a regular animal. That having been said, there's one more unique law which the Psukim teach, and that is that if the 11th animal was declared the 10th, and therefore it gained some sort of Maaser Behema status, once it gains that Maaser Behema status, it actually turns into a korban shalomim, and that is the status which it gains. Biyazme, in this particular case which the Mishnah discussed, the animals which he declares to be the 9th and 10th are in reality the 10th and 11th, and the law is that they need to be left to develop a blemish and be invalidated as korbanos and then eaten as regular animals. Now this makes sense regarding the first animal, which he called the 9th and in reality was the 10th. However, the animal which in reality was the 11th and he called the 10th, we just mentioned, and we're going to see in the continuation of the Mishnah, that in such a case, that animal should really become a korban shalomim. And there is no need to leave it to develop a blemish and not be brought as a korban. However, the law is not that this is not the case. And the various mafarshim, the commentaries, have difficulty in explaining the difference. We are going to understand that unique law which the Torah taught only applies in a case where the mistake was made at the end of the counting. Now when he came to count the 10th, 11th, whatever it may be, that's when he made the mistake. But in this case, where the mistake was based on the beginning, that unique law introduced by the Torah would not apply. That is the second level. The fact that it becomes Maaser Behema at all does apply. But for it to become a Korban Shalomim would not apply. Alright, next scenario. Korachi Asiri, if he called the 9th animal the 10th by mistake, and then when he realized his mistake, he decided to fix it by Vlo Asiri Tishii, by calling the 10th animal the 9th. However, a moment later, he didn't realize, he forgot why exactly he called this animal the ninth, and so he called V'la'achadosar the 11th animal. That was the one which came after the one which he called nine, so he called this one Asiri 10. So he ended up counting 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 9, 10. Instead of 9, 10, 11, says the Mishnah, Shlosh Tom Kudoshin, all three of them gained the sanctity of Maisa Behema. Hatshi Nechel B'mumoy, the ninth animal, which he called 10, needs to be left to gain a blemish or a wound, and then can be eaten. V'hasiri M'maiser, and the tenth animal, even though he called it the ninth, it would be Maisa Behema and bought as a korban. Since in reality it is a tenth animal, even if it wasn't called a tenth animal, it would still be bought as a korban, like regular Maisa Behema, V'achadosar Karu Shalomim, and the 11th animal would be bought as a korban Shalomim. And just like any korban Shalomim, according to this opinion of the Mishnah, V'oisa Tamura, the law of Tamura applies. Tamura is when one has an animal which needs to be brought as a korban, and he declares that he wants to bring a different animal instead of that animal. The law of Tamura states that in such a case, both animals now need to be brought as that korban. The sanctity of the korban shalomim, for example, would be given over to the other animal, but it wouldn't be taken away from that original korban shalomim. And that applies to this case as well. To Reb Meir, that's the opinion of Reb Meir. However, Amar Rabbi Yehuda said, V'chiyesh Tamura Isa Tamura, can something which is already itself Tamura, that it didn't become sanctified because of itself, but rather it gained its sanctity as a result of gaining it from a different animal, can Tamura be made from that animal itself? Rabbi Yehuda is of the opinion that this entire law that the 11th animal is considered to be holy is a sort of Tamura, that he called the 11th animal the 10th. It's like saying that this animal, which is not supposed to be the Maisa Behema, the carbon, should be the carbon. So it has the status of Tamura itself, and therefore it hasn't got enough power, enough sanctity, to give it over to a different animal, which he declares to be in replacement of that animal. Omer Mishrim and Reb Meir, they said in the name of Reb Meir, that the fact that the 11th animal is a carbon shalomim, and is brought as a carbon, is not because of the law of Tamura, because the law is that if somebody declare the law of Tamura only applies to certain karbanos. It does not apply to the carbon of Maisa Behema. For example, if somebody says, I want this animal to be bought instead of this Maisa Behema, Tamura does not apply in such a case. So you can't tell me that this law which the Torah introduced about the 11th animal becoming holy is like Tamura. The law of Tamura doesn't apply to Maisa Behema. Ilu ha Tamura lo ha karev. If this was indeed Tamura, it would not be bought as a carbon. In the case of Tamura of Maisa Behema, the animal is not bought as a carbon. Alright, and the Mishnah's next scenario is Kardachi Asiri. If he called the ninth animal the tenth, Vala Asiri Asiri, and the tenth animal the tenth, Vala Achadosar Asiri, and the 11th animal he also called the tenth. All three animals he declared to be the tenth. In this case, although the ninth animal does gain Maisa Behema status, Ein Achadosar Mekudosh, the 11th animal, which he declared to be the tenth, does not gain sanctity. Because Zehaklal, this is the rule, Kol Shalei Ne'ekashem Asiri Menu, any time where the status of the 10th animal is not uprooted from the real 10th animal, in Achadosar Mekudosh, the 11th animal does not gain sanctity. The 9th animal, by nature, is not dependent upon the 10th, but the 11th, which comes after the 10th, would only become Maisa Behema if the 10th animal was not called the 10th, and the 11th was sort of called the 10th instead of the 10th. But in this case, that's not the case, and therefore, the 11th animal would not become Maisa Behema. Solik Maseches Bechoros Mazel Tov. The main subject of Maseches Erchin is when one designates the value of a particular person or item to the Beis HaMikdash. And essentially there are two different ways to do this. One is by designating the actual value of that person or item. We're going to talk about people for now. And that would be based on how much that person would be sold in the marketplace as a slave. That's considered to be the person's value monetarily, and therefore if somebody declares upon himself, he makes a vow to give the Beis HaMikdash the value of himself or of a different person, he would be obligated to give the amount of money which would be received if that person was sold in the marketplace as a slave. Now the Torah also offers an alternative way of designating a person's value to the Beis HaMikdash, and that is the Erech of the person. The Erech is a fixed value which the Torah itself fixes for different people. There are essentially four different categories of ages, and based on one's age, that would be the Erech of the person, and it also depends on whether he is a man or a woman. the four age groups are up to 5 years old, somebody who is between 5 and 20 years old, 20 and 60, and somebody who is over 60 years old. And depending on whether he's a man or a woman, the Torah fixes a fixed value for anybody who fits into one of those essentially 8 categories. 4 different age groups, and whether he is male or female. The Masechta opens up by comparing and contrasting the designation of an Erech of a person. Well, the plural of Erech is Erchin, that's the name of the Masechta. And so he makes a vow to donate a value which has been fixed by the Torah based on the person's age or gender. And a vow to donate the actual market value of a person, that is known as the domim. The real value of the person as opposed to the fixed general value of somebody in that category which the Torah fixes. Now it's important to note that one is able to give an erech or the domim of himself or of somebody else. One can also make a vow to give the market value or the erech, the value which is fixed by the Torah, of somebody else. It's really just a way of defining how much money he is going to give to the Beis HaMikdash. Begins the Masechta, HaKol Ma'arichin, anybody is able to make a vow to give the Erech of somebody, and he'll be obligated to fulfill that vow. The Gemara explains that this is coming to include somebody who he might have thought would not be included in this, and that is a unique law that although a child under the age of Bar Bas Mitzvah, 13 years old for a boy, 12 years old for a girl, is exempt from keeping any mitzvah, we learn that somebody who is in his final year before reaching Bar Bas Mitzvah, so for a boy it will be a 12-year-old boy, or an 11-year-old girl, they are known as a mufla hasamuch la'ish, somebody who is close to being at his adulthood stage, and if he makes a vow, then he will be obligated to fulfill that vow as long as we check that he understands what he is doing. That's the person that the Mishnah is coming to include in the word hakol, that anybody, even this person, is able to make such a vow and be obligated to fulfill it. V'ne'erochin, anybody can be the subject of an erech vow. Meaning if somebody says, I'm going to give the value of somebody else, that someone else can be anybody. The Gemara explains this comes to include even somebody who hasn't got a market value. Somebody who has a very disgusting appearance or something about him, which means that nobody wants to buy him as a slave, and therefore he has not got his market value is zero. Nevertheless, since he fits into one of the 8 categories of Erchin which the Torah provides, which is not based on somebody's market value as a slave, he therefore can be the subject of an Erech vow, and the one who made that vow would need to give that regular Erech based on whatever category that person fits into. Neidrin. Anybody can make a neder, a regular vow, to give the market value of somebody. And once again, this would mean even somebody who is 12 or 11 years old, as long as they have an understanding of what they are doing. Vinidorin, and anybody can also be the subject of a vow to give the market value of the person. The Gemara explains that this is coming to include even somebody who is less than a month old. Although, for the Erchin, the values which the Torah provides, anybody who is under the age of a month, the Torah doesn't give him an Erech at all. Nevertheless, since somebody who is less than a month old could be sold as a slave, so that when he grows up, the master will be able to make him work for him, he has got a market value, and therefore he can be the subject of a vow to give the value, the market value, of that person. Now, we're going to learn later on that regards to the laws of Erchin, one of the unique laws which does not apply to one who makes a vow to give the regular market value of somebody, if the person who made a vow to give the Erech of the person becomes poor, and he's not able to afford such a designation, such a donation to the Beis HaMikdash, there is a process that he's able to do by going to a Kohen, and he would need to give a smaller amount, he wouldn't need to give the entire value of the Erech which he vowed to give. Now, because that process involves going to a Kohen, I might have thought, based on the implication of the Psukim over there, that a Kohen himself is not able to do such a process of reducing the amount that he has to give. And I might have extended that to understand that actually a Kohen is not able to make an Erech vow at all. If we see that this particular detail of Erechin does not apply to him, maybe the entire idea of giving the Erech of somebody doesn't apply to a Kohen. And so the Mishnah comes to tell us, not like that, Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim, Even if you're a Kohen or you're a Levi, Yisrael, it makes no difference. You are able to make an Erech vow and be obligated to fulfill it. Noshim, women are also obligated if they make an Erech vow, v'avodim. And slaves, non-Jewish slaves as well, although a woman or a non-Jewish slave in general don't own any money because their husband or master owns anything that they own, nevertheless, they are considered to be obligated by their vow such that if the woman gets divorced or widowed or the slave is freed, and they would then receive money of their own, they would be obligated to fulfill that vow that they made. Tumtum, a person whose male and female organs are covered, and therefore it's unclear whether he is a man or a woman, v'androgynous, and somebody who appears to have both male and female organs, noidrin v'nidorin, they are able to make a vow to give the market value of somebody or of themselves. V'nidorin means that they can be the subject of a market value vow, u'ma'arichin, and they can make a vow to give the erech of somebody, however, v'loin erochin, they themselves cannot be the subject of an Erech vow. Because only a certain male and a certain female have an Erech which the Torah provided. The Torah talked about categories of a man and a woman, but somebody who is possibly a man, possibly a woman, doesn't fit into any of those categories of Erechin which the Torah provides. A deaf and dumb person, or a fool, or a child who is under the age of 12 or 11, important to note, although in general a child refers to somebody who is below the age of Bar Bas Mitzvah. Over here, as we explained, it refers to somebody who is under the age of 12 or 11. All of these people do not have a sufficient level of understanding, and therefore, Nidorin v'Ne'erochin, although they can be the subject of a vow to give the market value or the Erech, however, they cannot make a vow themselves to give a market value of somebody or the erech of somebody, because that vow simply won't obligate them, just like they are not obligated to keep any mitzvahs. Because they have not got a sufficient level of understanding and intelligence. And ends off the Mishnah, somebody who is less than a month old, nidor, he can be the subject of a vow to give the market value, because he could be sold in the marketplace so that he can be a slave when he is older, avalei nerach, but he cannot be the subject of an erchin vow, since all of the Torah's categories for erchin only begin from one who is a month old and over. Mishnah Beis, when the Torah talks about erchin, it opens up by saying, Dabel b'nei Yisrael, that you should speak to the Jewish people, which implies that this entire idea which the Torah has introduced of having a fixed value for different categories that only applies to a Jew, but not to a non-Jew. On the other hand, the Torah goes on to speak in a far general, more inclusive term, ish kiyafli, when a person makes a vow. It implies that the Torah is talking about any person, not just a Jew. And based on that, we have the following argument. Hanochri, a non-Jew, Rabbi Meir says, Nerach, he can be the subject of an Erech vow. For example, if a Jew said that I want to give the Erech of a particular non-Jew, so the Jew would be obligated based on the age and gender of that non-Jew. The Jew would need to give the Erech, avalei marech. However, the non-Jew himself cannot make an Erech vow to obligate himself. Rabbi Yehuda says that the way to settle this contradiction in the Pesukim is the exact opposite. Marech, a non-Jew is able to make an Erech vow. For example, if the non-Jew said that I want to give the Erech of a particular Jew to the Beit HaMikdash, he would be obligated to do so. Avalei Nerach, however, he himself cannot be the subject of Erech, because the Erechin values which the Torah gave are specific to Jews. The Gemara explains the deeper understanding of this argument, why exactly Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda hold what they do. Be as it may, they both agree, says the Mishnah, Zevo Zemoidim, both Reb Meir and Reb Yehuda agree, Shenoidrin V'Nidorin, that non-Jews are able to make a vow to give the market value of somebody, and they would be obligated to do so. This is a fully valid vow, and they can also be the subject of a vow to give the market value of a non-Jew. And this law is also learnt from Pesukim. Mishnah Gimel, Hagoyseis, one who is on the verge of dying, Vayotzi Lehoreg, or somebody who is going out to be killed by the Beis Din, if the Beis Din condemned him to be killed, Lo Nidor, he cannot be the subject of a vow to give his market value, because he has no market value. Nobody would buy him as a slave right now. And Lo Nerach, he also has no Erech. Now, this is more surprising, because this is not based on anything specific to the person. And at the end of the day, he fits into one of the categories given by the Torah. However, because the Torah says regarding Erchin that in order to evaluate the person's Erech, the He'emidoi lifnei HaKoyein, that we need to stand him up in front of the Koyein, who would evaluate his Erech. We learn from there that somebody who is not able to stand up, that could speed up his death, so he cannot have an Erech, and somebody who has been convicted and needs to be killed, it's also learned from Psukim that he has no Erech. However, Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya says, Nerech, he can be the subject of an Erech vow. He still does have an Erech which the Torah fixes. Because he has the Erech has a fixed value, and it's not based on this person's market value. So it's irrelevant that nobody would buy him as a slave right now, but he cannot be the subject of a vow to give his market value, because the value is not fixed, and this particular person has no market value. And essentially, regarding the sources of the Tanakhama, the first opinion of the Mishnah, Rabbi Chanina ben Akavya, argues on the way to learn those Pesukim. Rabbi Yossi says, and the truth is the first part of what Rabbi Yossi is saying, everybody agrees with. Noider, one who is about to die or be killed, can make a vow to give the market value of somebody to the Beis HaMikdash, Umarech, or to give the Erech of somebody to the Beis HaMikdash, Umakdish. He can donate a specific item to the Beis HaMikdash, and that would all be valid. And now Rabbi Yossi's point, which he argues on the previous opinions, is that Vim Hizik, according to Rabbi Yossi, if somebody like this damages somebody's property, Chai Batashlumen, he would be obligated to pay. Now, the truth is he's about to die. Rabbi Yossi's point is that his inheritors would be obligated to pay, whereas according to the Tanakhama, this kind of monetary obligation does not pass over with the inheritance.